Hello, college football fans, and welcome to episode 163 of College Football Throwdown. I'm your co-host, Alex Schmitz, and today I'm joined, as always, by my dad, Peter Schmitz.
Hello, college football fans and Husker fans.
Hello, hello. We are a father-son duo here to talk about college football by college football fans for college football fans. And today we'll be talking about Nebraska's loss to Maryland in college football, as well as a little bit of volleyball update and some of the craziness going on in the national world of college football, the big coaching firings, the drama over Michigan with the sign stealing, and the big games from this past week. So there's a lot to get to.
Yes, there is. Craziness.
Yes. And I should first apologize to our listeners. My voice is a little different. I'm still getting over a little cold I had this past week, but I'm on the upswing.
All right. That's good.
Yes.
You got to ride that horse and get rid of it.
Yes. And as every doctor orders, the best way to get over a cold is to have a cold beverage. Isn't that right, Dad?
Sure. Absolutely. Whatever the doctor says.
Yes. So I've got my Japanese Sapporo beer here.
Gotcha. Well, and I have a Yingling beer myself here, which I just spilled.
Way to go, man.
Thank you.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers. All right.
So, yes, we were hoping that we'd be here talking about Nebraska getting to 6 wins, qualifying for a bowl game. And I was the optimistic one on the previous podcast who thought we could pull out a 3-point win over Maryland. I predicted a 24-21 win. Well, you predicted that Maryland would score a lot on us, 38-17. It didn't quite go the way either of us expected, and that it was a much lower scoring game of 13-10, which Maryland narrowly won over us, in a game that was, kind of a mixed bag, right? Because on the one hand, you were detailing on the previous podcast how Maryland was a particularly bad matchup for us, how their quarterback, being a good thrower, could really put up a lot of points on us. And our defense stepped up to the challenge. And even though they did give up some big plays, they also got several turnovers and had some really crucial stops, you know, to keep them to just 13 points. But yes. Of course, it was the offense and the quarterback situation which came to bite us in the butt yet again.
Exactly. If you had told me, Alex, before this game that Nebraska was going to hold Maryland to 13 points. That offense, those great wide receivers, that outstanding quarterback, the 13 points, I would have said, I was wrong, Nebraska won. You know, they deserve the victory, and congratulations to Nebraska's defense for overperforming my expectation for sure. And then if you add into that the fact that we had, whatever it was, 5 turnovers.
Yes.
I would have said, oh my God, we got absolutely, woodshedded, right? That's a woodshed score with 5 turnovers, but it wasn't. Now, part of that was because, frankly, Maryland played poorly. You know, right. I mean, I'm sure their coaches are looking at it and saying, oh my God, how did we win this football game? How did we play this badly and still win?
Right.
So I'm sure they're feeling that as well.
Right. Well, and one trend from last week that we did see continue, which I appreciated, was that we were very low on penalties. We only had one for 15 yards. Of course, it was a critical one right at the end of the game. But compare that to 10 penalties by Maryland for 92 yards. We certainly won out in that regard. And then, as I mentioned, we forced 3 turnovers from them. So if we didn't turn it over 5 times, you know, you'd think if your defense forces 3 turnovers, you should usually be able to win that sort of game. But unfortunately, Heinrich Harburg turned the ball over and then later got hurt, and he was out of the game with a sprained ankle, which called up Jeff Sims to be our replacement. And we were kind of wondering, okay, maybe he should get his chance. You know, we've discussed that in some of our earlier podcasts because he is, in his abilities and what he's shown on film a better thrower than Harburg. And he did have a couple nice throws in this game, but he also showed his propensity to turn the ball over, especially a sequence where he turned it over on the first play of two consecutive drives. And so at that point, his mental game seemed to be totally shot. And so the coaches gave the third string quarterback Chubba Purdy a try, who we've barely seen this season. And he actually put up a great effort and marched the ball down the field. And it looked like we were about to score a touchdown. And if not a touchdown, at least 3 points. But of course, we had to cap that off with a interception as well. So even what seemed like our perhaps triumphant moment to win the game didn't come through.
Right, exactly. And kind of an amazing set of circumstances that we find ourselves in for really the you know, 14th time in a row, 14th season. It just seems that long since we have had a quarterback that was capable of running the offense that our team was trying to run. We have not had a quarterback that had a skill set that matched what we want to do or what our various offensive coordinators over 3-4 coaches, you know, and we find ourselves in that situation again where we don't have one quarterback, not one, on our whole roster that is capable of doing what we need a quarterback to do. And if we had a quarterback that literally just was able to be efficient with the basic stuff, they wouldn't have to be exceptional, just basic, then we would have a much better record.
Yes. No, yes. Many Nebraska fans are wringing their hands and, you know, frustration at the fact that, you know, we went after Jeff Sims, you know, as our transfer guy when he was the quarterback with the most turnovers in the country last year. And now we are the team with the most turnovers this year. We extended our lead in that particular race this past week.
If you want to call it that.
But you linked me to a YouTube video, which correctly pointed out that, you know, if you look at the quarterbacks who are in the transfer portal at that time and who had a realistic chance of going to Nebraska, right? Like obviously the really good ones were not going to choose us. So when you look at it from that perspective, Jeff Sims on paper didn't seem too rough compared to the competition, right? They also had their fair share of problems.
Absolutely. I was thrilled. I'll be honest with you. I was thrilled when Jeff Sims made the decision to, you know, come out of the portal from Georgia Tech and choose Nebraska. I mean, I was very happy, and I thought this will be a great guy that potentially could be our starter, but certainly could be a good, you know, create a competitive room for that quarterback room, which at that time still had Thompson and Smothers, right? So it had some other quarterbacks who had started for Nebraska, and we could look at and say, okay, we got some options here that we can choose among, right? But then it didn't work out. Obviously, Thompson left, Smothers left, and then Sims became the de facto choice. Now, some are going to say, well, Sims was already the choice. No, I don't think so. I genuinely believe that Sims was in the driver's seat. Yes, Sims was going to start the beginning of fall camp as the number one quarterback, but Thompson still had a chance during fall camp to win that job back. Or he certainly would have been given an opportunity fairly early in the season after what transpired with Sims, right? So it's just, I think this is like a microcosm. It's a photographic history of why you choose to stay rather than all this transferring crap.
Right. And one thing that was interesting, if you look at the stats, despite the fact that we lost the game, we almost equaled them in terms of number of first downs. The total yards was 269 to 382. So, you know, we did move the ball on them in certain moments, and we controlled the time of possession. We had the ball for 46 minutes, so quite a bit more than them. And in terms of our percentages of running to passing, we ran it 40 times and we passed it 21 times. So it was pretty even, yep. Two-thirds split. But of course, I know your contention is the choice of when we chose to pass it in those situations. That's kind of your critique of Marcus Satterfield.
Yes, exactly. I think it's the set of circumstances and looking beyond trying to balance your offense or to be a, you know, two-thirds run, one-third pass, all that kind of crap means nothing when you're scrambling, when you're basically like fighting to keep your head above water, right? Get to that six wins, build yourself with some success, then you do whatever it takes to win. And what the balance of run pass is irrelevant, right? What you do is what puts you in the best position to win. And my criticism, and the video I sent you was a good summary because it was an optimistic summary, and it recognizes that, hey, you know, Coach Rhule, although he doesn't want to sacrifice this season, he is a process guy. He's all about the process that he's trying to establish and get these guys, the entire team, all the different positions on the team, positioned and ready to embrace the grind that it will take for them all to get better. And we're a young football team, but it's just got to be frustrating for the players and the coaches to be this close and look back and realize there are three games, maybe four, this season that we lost, that if we had just had basic quarterback play, we probably win. But right. We don't have that guy. We just don't have that guy.
Yep. Yep. And Rhule stood by his man Satterfield in his press conference later on and said, you know, if you're upset with Satterfield, if you're upset with the third down throw call that led to that interception by Chuba Purdy near the end of the game, you can blame me. I thought it was a good play call, just badly executed. So he's sticking with, you know, the play calling that we saw in this game. Now that we've seen, though, that you turn the ball over five times and that Harburg is hurt, and we know that Jeff Sims and Chuba Purdy are getting equal time in practice this week. They're not sure exactly who's going to be the starting quarterback. So maybe, you know, they do change up their offense as we go into this Wisconsin game, and go for something more conservative that is specifically focused on not turning the ball over. Cause if we didn't turn over five times against Maryland, we would have won that game, you know.
Absolutely.
Our defense is playing good enough that we would have gotten it
done. Our defense surprised me with how well they played. They still gave up a couple of critical key plays at key times. And that's the other thing I'm going to tell you is that inevitably you have to anticipate and plan that Nebraska's defense is always going to give up some big plays late in a game. And the reason for that is twofold. One, we're a very aggressive team. That's the nature of the 3-3-5. And as a result, it's high risk, high reward. And over the course of a game, a lot of times that can kind of play out in your favor, especially if you have a good coordinator who knows how to organize and call the right plays at the right times. But at some point, especially as the game progresses, the other team gets a sense of what he's doing, what his rhythm is, what he's trying to accomplish. And then they're able to say, okay, if we do this, or if we line up this way, he's likely to do this based on the situation. And as a result, we're going to call this play instead of that play, and it's going to be open. And you know what? Inevitably that happens, especially when you consider, okay, I might be in a position where I no longer have to worry about three downs. I now have four downs because I'm not punting. I'm going for the win. It's late in the game. I'm going for the win. And when you're in that situation, the defense has to be different. It has to be able to line up and just physically shut somebody down. And we're not that team. Our defense is composed of athletes who are being targeted in various blitzes and twists and things like that that accomplish the great goals that we have. I mean, we are one of the top, you know, in terms of actual number of touchdowns scored, we're in the like the top six or seven in the whole NCAA.
Right. Well, part of that is because the Big Ten West is not a great league this year.
It's atrocious. Yeah.
But, and to your point, we actually did stop Maryland twice on fourth downs. They went for it twice and yes, we stopped them both times.
Yes. So, I mean, bottom line is I've got to give great credit to our defense. They have found a way. You know, Coach White has just done some amazing things, and I'm really, really pleased with what they've done. And I respect Coach Rhule so much for how he's approaching this. It's just that it's just really hard for Nebraska fans who are so desperate, and I mean desperate, to get to six wins, for him to compromise that opportunity. And he did, because like he said, it was his call. It was ultimately that decision on that third down. He could have vetoed that decision. I guarantee he was on the headset. He was involved in that decision. And he chose to pass that. Now, Nebraska fans will second guess him almost all the way out to the door, right? Because it's like, how can you be that stupid, right? Now, of course, that's being viewed from a hindsight 2020 type of thing, right? But, and so I have great admiration for Coach Rhule and his willingness to stay committed to his process. Right. But that doesn't mean I can't be angry with him and his coaching staff. I'm not angry with the players. I'm angry with the coaching staff for making those choices, for putting them in those situations.
Right. Now, focusing on the upcoming game against Wisconsin, it is an away game for us. However, Wisconsin is in a similar situation to us in several ways. Their offense is very beat up. They're on a three-game losing streak currently. They played at home against Northwestern last week and lost 24-10. And it was an ugly game. It was actually 24-3 for basically the entire second half. Northwestern didn't score any more points and were being pretty conservative. And then Wisconsin couldn't get anything going either until the very last drive of the game, where within the like the last 10 seconds, they scored a touchdown to make it 10 points. But I just from watching the highlights, you could hear the silence in that stadium.
Oh, it was empty.
Well, I'm sure it was by the end.
Every stadium leaves, but I'm telling you what, the Wisconsin fans, they departed that stadium before the game was over. It was amazing how empty that stadium was.
Right. And of course, they're in the first year of a new head coach as well with Luke Fickle on their staff, and it's not going great for them. So I think this is a hard game for us to win. You know, like we said, we've made it harder on ourselves by not beating Michigan State to get to six wins. But Wisconsin
or Maryland.
But Wisconsin is doable. And I think it's critical that we score early, that we go up early, because, you know, we've talked about Nebraska being China dolls, you know, and the fans being really tense in the stadium and things like that. Well, I think the same applies to Wisconsin with their current situation. So if we can manage to go up early, do some good things early, then I think we could ride that momentum and Wisconsin might fall apart, kind of like they did in this Northwestern game. So I think that's our best bet for pulling out the W in this game. And personally, I'm hoping that Chubba Purdy is the guy coming out to start the game. I know he's young and he doesn't have a lot of experience, but I've seen enough of Jeff Sims at this point. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but I don't trust him as a quarterback. So I'd rather see the guy who showed flashes of great talent in the previous game.
Okay. So there's a couple of things that I will throw into this mix. Number one, I'm going to kind of maybe work backwards a little bit and hope that I can remember all the points you just made. Number one is that, Heinrich is clearly recovering from an ankle injury. It's pretty significant. So he was able to take some mental reps, but he wasn't able to do a whole lot on Tuesday in practice. So I'm not sure if he's going to be our guy, right? He might be, quote, quote, available by Saturday, but I don't think he's going to be our starter. So it does come down to Jeff Sims or Purdy. Purdy, you need to understand, also has an injury that is going to require surgery as soon as the season's over. So he is playing through that injury and trying to hold himself up. And even as early as recently as Monday, Coach Rhule said he's banged up. Now, I find it hard to believe that a guy who hasn't played hardly all season, so just practice, has basically been banged up most of the season.
Right.
And he played in this past game, basically about, a drive and a half. And in doing so, got banged up again. So whatever this injury is, I don't think he's going to last.
Right.
So the reality is that if they want to start Purdy, they have to start Purdy with the full and complete knowledge that it is unlikely he's going to make it through the game. So if that's the case, I almost think, no, they're not going to do that. They're going to go with the only guy that's healthy, which is Sims, right? And they're just going to have to just keep coaching him, keep trying to instill confidence in him. And then, we'll see what the results are on this weekend. Now, the thing with him is, again, this gets back to the offensive coordinator and his choice of plays. There are things you can do when you have a fragile quarterback that will help that quarterback be successful and build some confidence over time with some simple throws, with some nice counter action, play action passes, some simple square in routes to tight ends, little out patterns on a rollout, simple stuff to achieve a passing game of sorts, right? And now it's not going to be big, but it's going to be some real nice stuff, right? And then in doing that, you build the confidence. The rest of the time, you need to talk to him about his mechanics for handing the football off and for doing the basic stuff that he's supposed to do as a quarterback. Get the play conveyed and get out of the huddle and get to the line on time so you're not having to call timeouts. All those kinds of things that a quarterback has to do well. And that's what I have to look for from Sims. So my prediction is, Sims is our quarterback to start the game. Purdy is available if needed because he is basically injured, waiting for the season to be over to get a surgery. So the bottom line is, Sims is our guy.
Okay. I see your point, and I also saw those comments from Rhule about Purdy being banged up. So that is a concern for me, especially Wisconsin, right? We know they've got a salty defense and they will get some hits on the quarterback.
And also, of course, two of Wisconsin's best players who've been out most of the season because of various injuries, Allen, their running back, and Mordecai, their quarterback, are both back and available for the Nebraska game.
I want to say both of them played last week.
They did. They finally got back last week. So now Okay. They've had a week to practice and et cetera. But my point is both of them have been injured and on the shelf during many of these losses that they had until this past week, I will concede. But the bottom line is Mordecai is a real player. And if he's starting to feel healthy again, he's a difference maker for them. Allen, as we know from last year, is a stud running back. And if he's healthy, he's dangerous. And it just irritates me that they're always, everything always lines up for Wisconsin. All their players come back for us. They get the best time slot. They're going to get a night game at Camp Randall, which is going to be rocking and just obnoxiously loud because it's a night game, and those guys and those fans are going to have all day to get sober, get sloshed and geared up to scream and holler. Now, what you said, Alex, is so true, that if we could have some success early, like Northwestern did, and take that fandom, take that audience out of the game, that would be huge. But we haven't been able to do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there have been sometimes in this year, I would say, where we have had like a good drive early in the game, and then we would like struggle to repeat that success, you know, later on in the first and second quarter.
Exactly. There was one game where we were able to go up 17-0. We should have been up 21 or maybe even 24-0 at halftime. That's the only game where we did that.
Right. But I'm going to go ahead and give a prediction that it's going to be an ugly game, a low scoring game, because that's the trend with us. And I think we need to keep it low scoring for us to win. So I'm going to say that we win 17-13 over Wisconsin.
Wow. I love your continued optimism. God bless you. I tell you what, you know what? Nebraska's got to prove it to me. They've just got to prove. And I feel so terrible because that defense is exceptional. Our defense is really good. It's one of the better ones in the Big Ten. And that's saying something, man. But our special teams are questionable, and our quarterbacks are an abject failure. And we even have a running back. You know, that I tell you, Johnson has really emerged as a talent for us at running back. And our offensive line had one of the best games that they've had all year last week.
That's true. The offensive line played pretty well. And they I agree really with you, did. Johnson, especially on the last drive, he had some great runs that, you know, yeah. kept extending the play out further, you know, to get some extra yards, which you like to see.
Absolutely.
I don't dispute you on special teams. I would say that we're like average on special teams. We're not, I think, special, but in this past game, we pulled off a fake punt to get a first down that was very well executed. And we made our field goals that we needed to make in that game, you know, that we went for.
But any time when we really need a good punt, we get the opposite. Okay. That has been our history. No, I'm serious. That is our history. When the chips are down and we need a field goal, and when the chips are down and we need a good punt, our specialists fail us.
Right.
And that's the key is, do you have a specialist who can handle the pressure? And right now we don't. Okay. We don't.
I'll agree with you on the punter, both the field goal kicker, right? There was just a few games ago, right? He kicked a 50 plus yarder.
I understand. But I'm talking about when the game's on the line. Can he do that? Because when he's been in that situation, he has failed.
Right. Well, I would have to look back. I don't think there was a game-winning field goal situation this year.
But when you knew these 3 points were super critical, they were like the difference between us staying within striking distance of a team that we were behind or needing positive momentum just to get 3 points out of a drive so that we could start building some positive momentum, and boom, nope, doesn't happen. No. Now, if it's a kick where we're already in the lead and we're extending our lead, it goes well.
Okay.
So my point is, until we prove that shit, we don't have it. Okay. And so I need to see that before I can feel good about saying this is what I can expect from Nebraska. Now, I'm here to tell you, again, I think we've made positive progress within our special teams. I like a lot of what we're doing. I do. We just don't have the personnel who are up to the challenge fully at this point. Our kicker is a freshman. He's going to get better. He's going to build his confidence, his leg strength, and his consistency. I would expect all those things to improve as he progresses through his career. So those are all good things. I want desperately, you have no idea. Well, you just don't. because, you do know that Wisconsin is my alma mater. And I'm sick to death that my lifelong fandom of Nebraska football has had to take a second seat to those guys in every damn sport that exists under the sun. And I'm sick of it. And I want more than anything for us to win.
Right. Okay.
Okay. But we're not gonna.
Well,
I'm afraid that we're gonna see Mordecai look great. We're gonna see the running back, Allen, you know, look like his old self. And we're gonna probably see about a 10-point loss. So I'm gonna say 28-17 Wisconsin.
And I just did a quick look through. So in the Northwestern game, they kicked a field goal earlier in the game, and then we came down in the first quarter and kicked a field goal to tie the game 3-3. So there, Tristan Alvano did what you said, and we were not up, and he kicked a good field goal. I'll admit, I looked at it the other times, and we were up in the game on all those other field goals.
Right.
But there's one time, so there you go.
One time, right. There's one time. Well, and I don't mean to, I'm not saying that to browbeat Tristan Alvano. He kicked, like you said, he's kicked a 50-some yard field goal. Guy's got a great leg. He's got a great future. I'm excited that he's our kicker. I think he's going to be great one day. But he has not demonstrated the ability to be clutch and to be consistent when we need him to be, okay? And that's where we're not where we want to be. And until I can see that, until I can see that consistently from our team, I can't be confident that it's going to happen. See, now, if I'm Michigan and I've had one of the best punters in the country for, you know, 4 or 8 years, because we've been able to recruit great punters year after year after year, that then I can go into a game believing that my punter is always going to do a good job, because it's the way it always is, right? And that's the way I felt for literally 35 years following Nebraska football, because we always had great kickers and punters. Always. It was never a question. I didn't have to worry about that part of the game.
Right.
And now the last 20 years I have. So.
Yes. All right. So we've made our predictions for the Wisconsin game.
Yes.
Switching over to Nebraska volleyball real quick. The girls played two games this past week against Northwestern and Illinois. Won both of them 3-1. You don't want to be giving up those sets, right? And some of them were closer than you would want. But the bottom line is they retained their undefeated record. And they're going into a tougher week this week with Michigan and Iowa on the schedule. With, of course, Wisconsin waiting for them the following week. So that's the big one. But I'm hoping that they'll be able to go into that Wisconsin game undefeated, and we'll get another huge titanic matchup.
Right. That is the hope, and certainly that is the expectation from everybody exterior to the program. But I can tell you that from, because I watch it pretty closely, I guarantee you Coach Cook is not real thrilled with where his team's at right now. He knows that they have not improved. And if you're not getting better, you're getting worse, right? And we have shown, I think he used the term, we have been exposed in this last game. And what he means by that is that there are elements of our game that used to be viewed in a very positive way by not only our own team, but by opponents. Like opponents were like, wow, we're going to have to overcome this. And those things are no longer a clear strength of our team. We've lost some stuff there along the way. Now we're such a gritty team that we have found ways to win. We have just enough athleticism that we overcome all these opponents. But Coach Cook is trying to get those players to not play to the team across the net, but to play to a standard, to a Nebraska standard, and try to elevate themselves to that next level of talent so that they could then make a run, right, in the tournament. And right now he does not see that. So it's a great situation that we have, because we played on Sunday, and now we have until Friday. There's no game in the middle of the week, and it's a home game on Friday. So there's no travel or anything like that. So he has a training block, if you will, that he hasn't had for a few weeks now. And that is huge for him. So I think he's going to work the team very hard this week. I mean, very hard, and demand a lot of them. And they're going to try to go back to their fundamentals. So I'm really curious to see what Friday looks like, because this is a Michigan team that we're playing on Friday that is way better than the team we played. We played Michigan at Michigan earlier in the year, and there was a couple of players that weren't available at that time that have now become available and have played, and they are much better, and they're much more organized, And that team is playing way better volleyball than they were earlier in the year. So this Michigan match on Friday is critical for Nebraska because they could easily lose it. They really could. If they play like they have in recent weeks, they're going to be in another one of these battles just to get a W. Now, if they've focused and really enhanced their kind of reestablished the training regimen and the, what I want to say, those basic core skills, then it might be a clean 3-0 sweep and we move on. Then we play Iowa on Sunday, which is an away game, but it's at Iowa. It's a sellout, I understand. And I bet that suggests there's going to be quite a few Nebraskans there because that's the closest, a location to Nebraska that we have. So I still suspect a pretty good Nebraska representation there in Iowa City. And Iowa is truly the worst team in the Big Ten. So we can beat them probably with a B type of performance. But Michigan, that's a real competitor there. And we better be ready.
Yes. Well, and on the topic of Michigan, now switching back to football, and specifically the national world of college football, the Jim Harbaugh, Michigan sign-stealing situation finally had some concrete movement this past week, and that the Big Ten officially disciplined Michigan for its actions and suspended Jim Harbaugh, the head coach, from being on the field coaching in their final few games of the regular season. And of course, the Michigan University opposes this, immediately filed a lawsuit. I believe that it's being argued on this coming Friday. But Jim Harbaugh was not on the field for their past game against Penn State. And of course, the big one is the Ohio State game coming up next week. So that's probably the one they care about. But I know your perspective is that this is a pretty weak punishment, and the Michigan fans are kind of overreacting, and the NCAA is doing a deeper investigation that will probably lay out a further punishment down the line.
Exactly. And I got to give it to Michigan's PR and legal teams, because they've done a pretty darn good job of basically using distraction and what about this, what about that kind of approach to dissuade people from making the conclusion or drawing the conclusion that this is an obvious circumstance. Here's the thing. Michigan has never denied that they were doing it. Okay. Their denials are that Jim Harbaugh didn't know that exactly what this guy was doing. And the other denial is that, hey, everybody sign steals. Okay. And here's another example. And what about this example? And we found these people who've stepped forward and claim this and blah, blah, blah. So they've muddied the waters with all of these other speculations and accusations that this is a very common thing.
Though in the Big Ten statement, they flatly refuted that, basically saying you don't provide any specific evidence for people stealing your signs. And even if that is true, it doesn't permit your actions, basically.
Exactly. And the thing is, and people who are saying, oh, the commissioner overstepped his bounds, he's really screwed up here. I don't think so. If I want to be critical of the commissioner, I would be critical that the punishment that he gave them was way too weak. It's a joke. He's been suspended on game day for 3 weeks. Now, if you understand the number of decisions and the involvement that the coach has every day of the week with all the things that he has to decide, the meetings that he's in with all the different groups, right? He oversees and he puts his head in with the coordinators, offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator. He'll check in with the linebackers coach. He'll check in with the tight ends coach. You know, he's doing all of that every day. He's the one organizing and planning the practice plan for every single day. He's dealing with all the media. He's dealing with all the other various things. The only time that he's suspended is on game day. Okay. Well, not not to dramatically reduce the role of the head coach on game day, but his job is to, you know, get his team prepared. And that happens Monday through Friday. I mean, Saturday, he makes fewer decisions than any other day of the week. And so that is the day that you can afford to have him gone and still hardly miss a beat. So all these people who act like this is some major punishment, they don't have a freaking clue what they're talking about.
Not to mention that in the modern day, right, I'm sure he's texting somebody on the staff, you know, watching the game live and things like that.
Yep. Certainly that, again, is not illegal within the structure of the punishment, right? So if he wanted to, he could. I don't know if he's doing that or not, but he could do that if he was so inclined.
Right.
So this punishment is an absolute, an abject slap on the wrist that means nothing. Now, I get why the commissioner of the Big Ten did that. I think he did that because he had some angry people at the gate who were trying to make sure that Jim Harbaugh and Michigan were held accountable in a timely fashion, knowing that whatever the NCAA process happens, it's going to be too late, right? The players and the coaches associated with this football team, and frankly, last year's football team, which was very successful and played in the playoff, the college football playoff last year, those two teams were clearly the teams that were most benefited. They're the ones that benefited from this scheme than any other groups, right? So why would you wait to punish next year's team after this has been decided and this whole system has been dismantled? Those players, that team, that set of coaches, you know, they're not the ones that did it, right? Like, that's a different group. This is the group that needs to be punished. But the NCAA cannot move that fast. They can't complete an investigation fast enough. So Big Ten commissioner chose to do it on his own.
Right. Yes, I agree with your assessment in general. So I think it was good that he did something. We'll see how things continue to play out from here.
Exactly. And he did leave the door open for more punishment, which I think was wise.
Right. Then we got a bunch of coaching news this past week as well, in terms of sudden firings and openings and things of that nature. The big one, of course, being that Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M was fired. He has a $76 million buyout in his contract, so he's walking away with plenty of cash. And ironically, it's coming off of a game where they crushed Mississippi State 51-10. Now they are currently sitting at a 6-4 record. So it is, you know, not been the sort of year that they've wanted. The SEC Shorts YouTube channel put out a funny skit about the whole Jimbo thing this past week, which I liked quite a bit, because, you know, at the time it was a huge contract when he was hired, and everyone was like, oh, he won a national championship at Florida State, you know, this is gonna go so well. But his final record is 45-25 at Texas A&M,
which is way above 500.
Yes.
Okay. So Texas A&M, little note for you. You're not in the Southwestern Conference anymore. You're not in the Big 12 anymore. You're now in a real big boy league. You're in the SEC. And if you're 45-25 during a coaching tenure, and year in and year out, your coaching staff is successfully accumulating top 10 talent in recruiting, you might want to ask yourself, what can we do to support and guide and maybe coach this current staff, you know, improve their weaknesses such that they become more successful over time, as opposed to burning down the house and starting over.
Right. Admittedly, it is year six of the Jimbo Fisher tenure. So, you know, they have given him some time, and it's been kind of like 9-8 win type seasons.
What did Nebraska just go through?
I know. And well, last season, and 2022 was a 5-7 year, so that was his worst one.
Well, right. But my point is that Scott Frost was never above 500. We never went to a bowl game, right? And how many years did we give Scott?
Right. Well, but we
you follow me? Yes. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy that A&M in this situation, given that they are in the same division as Alabama, Auburn, and I believe Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
So those guys, I'm sorry. You know what? Your expectations are out of whack. Okay. You got to let Jimbo keep doing his thing. Now, does that mean that Jimbo Fisher doesn't have any pressure on him? No. Does that mean that he shouldn't have to be making some improvements, whether that be, you know, making some changes within his staff or maybe getting some of his current staff members to have some heart to hearts to say, okay, these are areas of our offense or defense that are unacceptable and need to be addressed immediately. Whether it be personnel, i.e. recruiting, or how these people are performing and therefore coaching. I mean, there's things you can address short of firing the whole lot of them. And they chose to do that, which A&M has a tendency to do, as does Auburn.
Right. Well, and the rumor that I saw at least was that some boosters finally got enough money together basically to pay for Jimbo's enormous buyout, the buyout for his staff, and then also money to hire a new coach. Right. So, you know, I'm sure the disgruntled rich folks associated with Texas A&M have been working on that for quite some time because it's an enormous amount of money.
Yeah. But again, who do they think, what do they think they're going to do that's going to be better, you know, versus just staying with Jimbo and figuring out how they can support him and help him become a better coach? If you find out that he doesn't really want to change, he doesn't want to be a better coach, he's not receptive to their offer. Okay, if that were true behind closed doors, and I don't know that, and we'll never know that, then maybe that is, this has been the right decision. If Jimbo was resistant to the fact that he should be criticized.
Right.
It's one of the things I love about Matt Rhule. He embraces, you have a right to be mad at me. You have a right to criticize me. It's okay. I get it.
Yes, it's a good stance to come from. And then, of course, the Mississippi State coach, who was the team that Texas A&M beat this past week, they also fired their coach named Zach Arnett. This was his first year. They're currently 4-6.
His first year.
Yes, taking over, of course, from Mike Leach after his unfortunate passing last year.
Yes.
And then San Diego State coach Brady Hoke announced that he will be leaving at the end of the season, so not a firing per se, more of a retirement. So those are two kind of other head coach openings that have come into the news this week.
Right, and as we talked a little bit offline, our defensive coordinator spent a number of years there at San Diego State, has a great affinity for that as a Californian. And so that's a program that he has lots of ties to. And so it's a little scary because I think if he got a head coaching opportunity, that might be hard for him to turn down.
Right. I did see people making the point that in terms of money, you know, they wouldn't necessarily be offering him a lot more than he's currently getting at Nebraska or could negotiate, you know, with how well he's done this year. So if he's kind of looking for a bigger head coaching job to get a bigger raise, then that's not necessarily the one. But if he's just looking for experience at a place he's familiar with, then it might be a problem for us.
Exactly. So we'll see. And I'm hopeful that Coach White is going to look at the environment he's enjoyed in Lincoln and say, man, I love what I'm experiencing here. I love these players. I want to see this through.
Yes. And then two other quick coaching notes. Penn State fired their offensive coordinator, Mike Urich, after their loss to Michigan this past week. And then UCLA, it's not confirmed, but it's rumored, reports came out today that they may be firing Chip Kelly after UCLA's game against USC this next week.
That piece of news just flabbergasts me. I, if they do that, I think they're just foolish. And not that it's a guarantee that Chip Kelly's going to be an enormous success, you know, going forward in the Big Ten. But for them to disrupt and start with a new coach and go through that whole reset when you have a coach that's been winning, you know, 6, 7, 8 games a year. He's stumbling a little bit this year, has a few close losses and things, you know, in a conference that, frankly, you know, early in the season, the Pac-12 had like 7 teams that were ranked in the top 25. It was a ridiculous number, right? So there was a bunch of teams that were doing very well in their non-conference games. And then, and as a result, you know, they showed that the Pac-12 had some really talented teams this year. So the fact that UCLA's 6-4, right, it shouldn't be a shock.
Right. Now, I will say, from what I saw in comments online, apparently Chip Kelly is not a fan of modern recruiting. And so there were a lot of critiques from him in that direction. So, you know, if you're not recruiting great, and then also you're, you know, well-respected offensive capabilities aren't really showing themselves on the field, I can see why you would want to move on in year 6. Once again, this is the 6th year there at UCLA.
Yeah, and that is true. If it's demonstrated that you know, the talent pool of the team is diminishing over time, unlike what was going on at A&M, where they were consistently getting top 10 ranked recruiting classes. If UCLA wasn't getting that, that is definitely something that makes it a little easier for you to make that separation and start in a new direction.
Right. All right, now we're going to dive quickly into the games from week 11 of college football and what went on in them. The big one, of course, was Michigan-Penn State, which we gave a prediction for. I went ahead and said that Penn State would pull out the upset and win 27-24. You said that Michigan would win 27-21, so our scores were pretty similar. And it was a low-scoring game, 24-15. Where Michigan beat Penn State at home, and Michigan really got up in the lead and then just ran that ball over and over again, running out the clock in the second half. Apparently they only had 2 completed passes, I want to say, or 2 attempted passes in the second half, and they ran it 26 times in a row. Penn State had 1 turnover, so that was one factor in the game, but more so is just Michigan's dominance on the defense, really slowing down Penn State's offense, which is why their offensive coordinator obviously was fired. And actually, both teams scored a late touchdown. So it was really closer to, would that be, you know, 17-8, you know, was the score for a lot of the game.
Right. Exactly. Yep. It was typical classic, you know, November Big Ten football, and yeah, slobber knocker, as they call them.
Yep. And then also Oregon USC was this past week. I predicted that Oregon would win 52-31. Well, you predicted a little lower scoring of 45-28. And the final score for that particular game ended up being 36-27. So lower scoring than either of us thought. A bit of a close game, although from watching the highlights of that one, Oregon was up quite a bit. It was 36-14 early in the fourth quarter, and they had really kind of dominated the game. They showed off their speed of their players and had gotten a lot of sacks on USC and stuff like that. But then USC kind of started to make a comeback in that fourth quarter, and I believe Oregon had a missed field goal as well and 13 penalties, which certainly would hold you back.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and that'll come back to bite you. They just got lucky that didn't bite them in this particular occasion. But yeah, that's a tough deal. And now Oregon and USC still have one more tough game, I think, in their last 2 weeks here, both of those schools. If I remember correctly, and but that's some tough deals for USC, because they have been on a free fall.
Right. I want to say USC, they have UCLA, and that's it. Actually, their last game is UCLA.
Oh, they only have one game left. Wow.
Yes.
Okay. And so they must have a bye week this week then.
And then Oregon has Arizona State and then Oregon State, which is a very good Oregon State team this year.
Right.
So, yeah, they do have one tough game left, I would say. There were some other big games. Georgia had a game, top 10 game against Ole Miss this past week, and they crushed them 52-17. I didn't actually watch the highlights for that one just because I assumed it was a beatdown.
It was, but actually early on in the game, you know, Ole Miss was hanging in there and looked like they were going to, but you could tell right away that it was going to be a score fest. And then by midway through the second quarter, you realized Ole Miss is never going to stop this team. Like they're going to score every time they have it. So Ole Miss is going to have to score every time if they hope to keep up. And they couldn't because Georgia defense was too good and it just got spiraled out of control.
Yeah. Probably the single craziest upset this past week was UCF going up against Oklahoma State, the Oklahoma State team
right. Who
just beat Oklahoma, right? Their best win of the season. And then they travel to UCF, to Florida, and get absolutely steamrolled 45-3, which is a UCF team that I think was on like a 5 or 6 game losing streak, has not played well at all this year. But Oklahoma State was 4-1 on turnovers and gave up a lot of big plays to UCF's talented players.
Right. Well, I tell you what, and this is just classic Oklahoma State, right? Every year they do something like this. They have a couple of big victories where they just look like they could be the best team in the Big 12, and then they lay an egg. And this is the classic Oklahoma State.
That's definitely true. And then this was an exciting one, North Carolina versus Duke, an in-state rivalry.
I watched that one, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It ended up going into double overtime with North Carolina narrowly winning 47-45. Watching the recap of that game, really, North Carolina should have been able to close it out in regulation. They had 6 total field goals in the game, and Duke kind of started to make their comeback in the fourth quarter. But there was a lot of late scoring. 17 points were scored between the two teams in the last 2 minutes of regulation, which led to the overtime situation. So pretty exciting game from what I saw.
I would agree with you. It was an exciting game. I'm kind of bummed. I said to your mom that I wish I had told your sister about it and encouraged her to go to that game because she's within 15 minutes of Chapel Hill and probably could have gotten a ticket. But it was a back and forth game. I didn't start watching it until late in the fourth quarter. And at that point, you know, Duke had the momentum, right? So I thought, oh my gosh, Duke's gonna win this thing. And like you say, they didn't. And then in the overtime, it was just kind of back and forth, and it was who's gonna make a mistake or make a big play.
Right. And then two of the top 5 teams in the country had close games this week. Florida State beat Miami 27-20, and Washington beat Utah 35-28. So both victories for them. They're holding on to their undefeated status, but a little too close for comfort.
Yep, I would agree. And particularly that Florida State-Miami game. I mean, you always know that those are going to be, you know, throw out the record kind of mentality. But I really thought Florida State was the better team based on the record and the trajectory of the two programs. But Miami put on a lot of fight into this one.
Yeah. Well, in that Washington game was particularly interesting. Utah was actually up 28-24 at halftime. So in the whole second half, Utah only scored, or actually they didn't score again in the second half. They were stuck at 28 points. And Washington actually had a pick six that the dude was running back, and then he drops the ball literally 2 yards before he's in the end zone, and the ball is just spinning there, you know, not at the goal line, and the refs call it, you know, Utah ball, and Washington proceeds to get a safety on them. So it was like, oh, it was a big brain play for us to just get the safety for our defense to get another big play. Just kind of odd to have your defense give up 28 points in the first half and then shut them out in the second. You don't often see that.
That's true. That is true. And it's good. That's why I'm very curious about Washington as a team as we go forward. And I, you know, I wonder if that behavior, what their scores were like and what their performances were like, whether that hurts them in that committee room with the CFP.
Yeah. And last game we'll mention here is LSU versus Florida. LSU was expected to win that one, and they did, 52-35. And talk about Heisman watch. LSU's quarterback is now on everybody's radar if he wasn't before. Jaden Daniels is his name. LSU had 700 total yards in that game, and he threw for 372 yards and ran it for 234. So wow. He had basically 600 of those 700 yards were him, you know, obviously including the receivers who caught those passes and everything, but a true masterclass performance from that kid, showing that he's a real dual threat guy that can beat with his legs as well as his arm. Now LSU, I think, will be held back in that they already have 3 losses, I think, this year.
Yep.
So, you know, the team overall isn't as good as the competition he'll face in the Heisman, but he as an individual player, I think, is definitely going to get a lot of consideration.
I would agree. And there's not a slam dunk obvious leader at this point, and that, which is why a singular performance like that by him is so, so impressive and gets so much attention. I'd be curious what the rest of their games are like, and whether he's able to rise to those occasions and just play well. He didn't have to do what he did. I mean, that's ridiculous what he did. But if he performs very well, then I think that'll keep him right in the thick of that Heisman race.
Well, we want to know what their last game of the year is. Texas A&M.
Okay. Which that could be a game where, you know, they could run it up on them, right? Because yes. They're going to be in disarray.
Yes, you would imagine so. So now this week, there are a few big games, you know, not as many, as last week, but of course the final week of the season will be chock full of all the big rivalry games and Michigan, Ohio State and all that fun stuff. But we did want to predict, Washington versus Oregon State. Oregon State is the home team, which I think gives them a bit of an edge. And I think I even saw that they were like a 1-point favorite by some of the bookies, you know, because they've had a good season. And Washington, you know, looked kind of shaky against Utah, you know, was ranked 18th in last week's rankings. So could be a scary one, but I think Washington will manage to pull it out.
I would agree with you. I think Washington is the superior team. But again, their home field is not nearly as rabid as a lot of other places could be. So I don't think that represents as big of an advantage for them. I think Washington wins it, and it's not going to be all that close. I think it'll be 14 points or more.
Okay. Well, what is your score then?
Gosh. Okay. So let's do 35-17.
Okay. I think I'll go a little higher scoring, and I'll say they win 42-31 over Oregon State.
Okay.
And then kind of a similar matchup, we've got Georgia versus Tennessee. It's a home game for Tennessee, but Georgia coming off of that big win over Ole Miss, I think you've got to give them the nod, even though that Tennessee crowd will certainly be more of the rabid type.
I would agree. I in this case, I just think that Georgia's going to be ready to dominate. And Tennessee, which of course has had struggles this year, is going to struggle to face that Georgia defense especially. Right.
Well, and I should mention, they had to play Missouri this past week. And got smoked by them 36-7. It was at home for Missouri. But all the more reason I think Georgia could dominate this one.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
Yeah. So I'll say that Georgia wins. And let's say it is 38-14.
Okay. That's a good score. I'm going to say something similar, but maybe go just a little bit higher. I'm going to go 45 Georgia to 17.
I like that. And then we'll quickly mention the college football playoff rankings here. They just came out earlier today as we're recording this podcast. And there was one big shakeup in that Georgia is now the number one team in the rankings over Ohio State. Ohio State did beat Michigan State very soundly this week, but Michigan State is not a very good team. So I think it's fair that they value that Ole Miss win more for Georgia. But I think if Ohio State beats Michigan, then they will be probably back on top.
Yep, I would agree with you on that one as well. Yeah. Wow, we're agreeing on a bunch of stuff.
I did see an interesting post. It was, you know, the rest of the top rankings remain the same. It's that Michigan 3, Florida State 4, Washington 5. This person was arguing that Washington should be above Florida State, even though they've kind of had some closer games maybe than Florida State, but they've played a tougher schedule, which I sympathize with.
Yeah, I would agree with them on that. Yep, yep. Florida State really hasn't, because the ACC has been kind of down this year. They didn't play anybody significant in their non-conference. Florida State finds themselves in a situation where they're not getting any respect, and rightfully so.
Yeah. Yeah. And Missouri is now number 9 as an 8-2 team. So probably first time Missouri has been in the top 10 in quite a while for their football program.
Yes.
So we'll keep an eye on that as things evolve this week. You know, even though I said there's not a ton of big games, there's always surprising upsets in these kind of quieter weeks. And we'll see how things shake out, you know, as we get into the meat of the playoff discussion. This will be our last year with it as 4 teams. So we'll enjoy this experience.
Right. And it's going to be a challenge for them, because I think they're going to end up with a bunch of teams that are all very similar in record. And they're going to actually have to figure out who played the tougher schedule.
Yeah, which, and I think the Pac-12 teams have a good argument this year, because the Pac-12 has been full of a lot of talented teams.
I would agree. That's absolutely 100% true.
They've been left out of the, you know, top 4 quite a bit over its existence. So this is kind of their revenge match, I guess you could say.
Just before they die?
Yes. quickly on that point, I saw another little news piece that said that Oregon State and is it Washington State, the two that are remaining in the conference, that they won their court battle, basically saying that we control the board of the Pac-12 because
we're the only one that didn't leave.
We're the only ones left. So I was happy to see that.
I am too, because I hope they just basically say, all you guys, you're going to pay your penalties to the Pac-12, and we're going to take all that money. We're going to get a windfall from all you jokers, and we're going to take all that money, and we'll distribute it among the two of us. And then in the meantime, we'll find another conference. But we're going to take a huge payday.
Right. Yeah. Yep, which I'm sure they could use, because they won't be getting the Pac-12 money anymore.
Exactly.
All right. Well, this wraps up this week's episode of College Football Throwdown. We hope you out there enjoyed listening to this one. You can reach out to us at HuskerPete13@gmail.com. You can also search for us if you search for College Football Throwdown on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can leave us a rating or review there. We always love hearing from the fans. So thank you all for listening, and thank you for joining me for this episode. And until next time, go Big Red.
Go Big Red.